Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out after probably what is about 2 months, I think, something like that. Anyway, a lot has gone on over the last 2 months, perhaps most notably the Cambridge municipal elections. And I just wanted to address some of the things about that. Again, probably should say right off the bat, I've got this multiple role as so both reporting on things, doing analysis of elections, but also being a candidate, so not that I put a whole lot of effort into that. And maybe I'll just sort of begin with that, just so we get that air cleared. So I was on the ballot this year, just like there were nine was it 18, nine, 19 people officially on the city council ballot, plus one write-in, Louise Vanden, for total of 20 fundamentally, and 18 for the school committee, I have to be really clear. I didn't put a whole lot of effort into it, and the reason was quite simple: is that it became pretty clear that there really wasn't a path for me to be successful in the election. Not because I'm not a good candidate. I think I'm a very good candidate, actually. Problem is that the system, as we practice it right now, is so dominated by candidate slates, and I kind of made a decision pretty early on that I wasn't didn't want to really be part of any candidate slates, and that's pretty much a kiss of death, right? So I thought, well, maybe you could be an independent candidate and present yourself like that. I thought with Councillor Toner departing, not seeking re-election, that well, maybe there was plenty of votes out there I could sort of compete with some of those. And I think I stood on one side of some of the controversy over the intention by the city to inflict bike separated bike lanes and loss of parking all along the length of Broadway. I thought there were some opportunities, however, but it became really, really clear, especially when I started looking at the amount of money that was being raised and eventually being spent. I said, no, there's just no way. I mean, I'm not going to be raising ridiculous amounts of money and doing that. Probably the most noticeable, and I'll bring up some of those numbers shortly here, was when Tim Flaherty entered the race, sort of the preferred county, as you will. And it's kind of hard for somebody who was born in New York to sort of compete with the county vote. So I figure, okay, that's going to go that way. And either Tim Flaherty is going to win that election to replace Paul Toner, or maybe if he comes up short, because he hasn't really been particularly involved in municipal affairs, maybe somebody like John Hanratty might pick it up or something like that, and he certainly had more incentive and more effort and whatever. By the way, it didn't help that I ended up with 250 students registering in my courses. Kind of took up a lot of my time. Other people are door knocking, I'm grading papers. Then I busted my knee too. So, as I like to say to people, it's kind of hard to run if you can't walk or you can barely walk. So anyway, so enough of that. I still thought it was a pretty, it's always a good experience. And if you really believe in elections in democracy, you really ought to, participate. And so I like to fully participate. But the mailings, the gigantic mailings, very expensive mailings, Tim Flaherty, I think he got one, two, three, four separate glossy mailings, all at a cost of probably in the vicinity of $100,000. I'm sitting here, talking about nickels and quarters, right? So okay, so enough of that. Anyway, what I'd like to do is just, I suppose anybody who's watching this program probably already knows most of what they need to know in terms of the election results and whatever. But I thought maybe I would kind of bring you up to speed a little bit here. Now, so I'm going to do this a bit sequentially, because the way things worked is there was an election on November 4th. It has been standard practice, and I hope it continues to be standard practice for the city to announce preliminary results just based on the ballot data that was available on election day, which would include things like absentee ballots that had been cast, early voting ballots. All of those things would have been scanned either prior to or during election day. But there would be a lot of what we call auxiliary ballots that would still have to be looked at on Wednesday, and that could change the results. Problem was, There was a it was a big glitch, a very embarrassing glitch, where the vendor, LHS Associates, did not clear out the data that was generated by test ballots and maybe others, but primarily I think it was just the test ballots. So those were lumped in, which, and it was just not a small amount. In each, they have to test each of the 33 precinct machines. So that I think the same ballots were run through all of them. So you had 33 basically infected files there with all of this ballot data. And I knew something was amiss on election night. I said, wait a minute, this something isn't right here. And I think maybe just to emphasize that a little bit here, I'm going to actually switch over here, if I can remember how to do this here, just to sort of show you the things that I saw that sort of didn't really make a whole lot of sense. So the original count on that Tuesday, November 4th, we call that the preliminary. When you get the all the other auxiliary ballots, we call that the unofficial. And then the final one takes place 10 days after Election Day, which includes things like overseas absentee ballots. Now, I happen to know that the way things are set up, the machine's set up, is that any ballots that had contain write-in votes at all, anywhere on the ballot, basically gets automatically set aside so that they can be looked at with human eyes to determine voter intent, which is a practice we've been doing ever since, I believe, 1999. And I noticed here, and if people can see this, that on that there were 33 write-ins showed up here in the first count. Now that should have been a zero. I said, all right, something is clearly not right about that. Okay. But then there were actually other things that were maybe subtle to most people. Maybe most people wouldn't even notice them, but I would, which is, there's always in ranked choice voting some level of what you might call alphabetical bias, meaning a relatively lazy voter votes for one person and then, gives a number one, then gives a number two to the next alphabetical, et cetera. Especially if they're voting for a slate. If the slate card gave the names alphabetically, they might just vote them alphabetically because they don't really appreciate the importance of the number one vote versus, lower preferences in sequence. So I started noticing some very rather strange things. So for example, I'll actually jump straight away to my own when I got counted out in the seventh count. So at that point, there were 322 ballots to give. And I said, okay, so they should just sort of go around there. Maybe there are certain candidates who are more likely to get transfers from me. But then I saw out of the 322, 107 to Kathy Zusi. The next closest was Bisio at 48. I said, that's a disproportionately high number. And I started noticing that similar kind of pattern happening, like when when Stan Rifkin was counted out, who's kind of a diehard socialist, not particularly similar to Zion Sharon, yet more ballots went to Sharon than anyone else. And that pattern continued when Sharon got counted out, not particularly similar to Denise Simmons, yet the largest share goes to Denise Simmons. And then I said, well, what on earth is going on here? This doesn't seem to make sense. I cannot understand this. Over on the school committee side, it was actually even more pronounced. So Melanie Gauss, who really didn't run a campaign much at all, but she was 187 ballots to give, but 73 go to Goetz, right? And then that pattern held up throughout. All right, so now let me, if you haven't quite guessed it, I'm going to tell you what was going on there. So since I didn't know about the fact that these test ballots were included in there, I thought, well, these are some lazy ass voters. Man, they're just voting alphabetically, because you look at it, the person who was getting the lion's share of the ballots was the one who was next alphabetical. And I even pointed this out to some of the people who actually run the tabulation. And said, really? Oh, wow, isn't that interesting? Well, that's part of the controversy too, because I think at that point they may have known that there was an error, but they weren't divulging it. Anyway, it was I said this I at first I thought, is the tabulation software gone kaplunk? What's going on here, right? Which it isn't, because it's actually very robust, but I just it couldn't quite make sense out of it. I thought, by lazy voters, my goodness. But as it turns out, that wasn't the problem. The problem was, and apparently it was discovered either at end of night, even though they had announced the preliminary results. Perhaps I don't know whether it was in on Wednesday morning or in the afternoon or whenever they discovered it, probably more toward morning, that there was a big error. Now, again, I love all these people. Everybody involved with the election system are friends. They think they're great people, but we all make mistakes. When the error was discovered, the very first thing they should have done was told the election commissioners, and then they should have made a public announcement, and they should have said, okay, there was an error in the preliminary count. This was the cause. So this is the corrected version of the preliminary count. But instead, they chose to say, well, this is only preliminary anyway, and things could change by Friday when they were going to finish all the auxiliaries. And then figure, well, maybe it'll all just get come out in a wash, right? Not really the best decision to say here. I mean, as you say, we all make mistakes. So as it turns out, the election commissioners actually didn't even know about this because they're not the tech people, really. They're just adjudicating individual ballots for voter intent. So they didn't even know until Friday. And then when they made the and then I got wind, apparently one of the school committee members, Eugenia Traha, who apparently had won, or at least preliminary won on Tuesday, that was just an anomaly based on the test ballots, and that in fact David Weinstein was going to pick up the last seat on the school committee, and apparently somebody talked to somebody who talked to somebody. Word got to Eugenia that she was actually not ahead in the race, was she was behind by like 80 ballots or something like that. She actually called me up that Wednesday, and I don't know whether it was before she heard this. I said, no, you're ahead. You based on the original, you look like you're ahead by 115. The auxiliary ballots shouldn't change that too much. And I was actually reassuring her, but it was all based on falsity, because I didn't know about the wrong ballots. Anyway, so she got wind of it. And anyway, so she was in a panic, and I can't blame her for it. And so I had heard about, I got, I heard that third and fourth hand, and I actually mentioned it to the elections officials, and they were so like, well, wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to be public knowledge. Oh, sorry. What did I know, right? Anyway, so Friday comes, at the end of day, they actually do the unofficial count, and then not only do they announce the results for the city council and school committee races, and I will say, and I'll even show you, that alphabetical bias was still, it's always a little bit of it there, but it was largely had just disappeared. All right. As I said to some people, I think on the Porter Square listserv or next door Cambridge or something, I said I should have gone full Sherlock Holmes on Tuesday night when I knew something was amiss. But I didn't really suspect that the test ballots were in there, which is something I should have known, because that same problem happened in New York City a few years ago, and then they had to do big apologies for having done that. So anyway, as I say, mistakes can be made, right? So that in the end, they did announce the unofficial results on Friday last, November 7th, I guess it is. And then there were relatively few. There are always relatively few ballots that come in which are provisional ballots, ones where whether somebody was registered or not is questionable, whether they were eligible to vote, so they cast a provisional ballot or an escrow ballot. And then there's the overseas absentee ballots, and there were, I think, only a couple of those. So anyway, and then they actually got to the point where they actually ran, gave the official numbers. So I think maybe what I'll do here, rather than dwell on the controversy, and hopefully we all learn from this, and we have better protocols, and LHS associations must make sure those registers are all cleared and zeroed out so there's no leftover ballot test ballot data. By the way, the reason for the alphabetical bias is that the people who fill out the test ballots, just to make sure that machines read them as intended. They tend to just put one for a candidate and then they tend to vote alphabetically because why not, right? Because it's unimportant. It's really just to see whether it's reading it appropriately. So it was really just that is what was causing the alphabetical bias. All right. So I think what I'm going to do here, if I can remember how to do this, is I'm just going to let's go walk through a little bit about how the actual count went. Right. In the end, the final official ones, which were only this past Friday that was announced, it was Mark McGovern and Sumbul Siddiqui were like neck and neck on who was going to finish in the first in the number one count. Not that that's that important. It's only important that you do reasonably well. Oftentimes, the person who gets the most number one votes tends to sort of own a certain constituency. And if another candidate is sort of part of a constituency where multiple candidates have similar characteristics, if you will, they tend to split the vote a little bit. So don't read too much into who got the most number one votes. I think that's one of the mistakes a lot of people make. But in the end, it was Siddiqui on top by 5 votes over McGovern. The quota turned out to be the election quota, which, by the way, is often mischaracterized. People say it's the number of votes you need to be elected, but that's actually not what it is. The quota is really the maximum number of ballots you're permitted to keep. Of course, once you reach quota, you are elected and you get to keep those, but you have to give away any surplus. All right. And that's necessary in order to maintain some degree of proportionality. Though the endless question is proportional to what? Because that's never clear to me what we're proportional to anymore. Surprisingly, Aya Al-Zoubi, who did well 2 years ago, and a lot of us who knew how this worked saw her as sort of the darling of the socialist crowd. So that I kind of knew she was going to win. The only question was she going to win at the expense of Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler? Well, it turns out they both got in. All right. Anyway, Kathy Zusi did very well. She was sort of the champion of the Cambridge Citizens Coalition crowd, and quite honestly, all their other candidates turned out to be little more than feeders to really like the CCC effectively became the committee to elect Kathy Zusi. So anyway, you can kind of work down there. Burhan Azim at 1999, then Sabrina Wheeler, Tim Flaherty, Denise Simmons, who I'm pretty sure wanted to have done better, but so it goes. And then Paddy Nolan. Now, again, just because you finish in the top nine doesn't necessarily mean you are the nine elected, though in this case, it did turn out to be that way. All right. So, anyway, so first you do the top vote getter is Sumbul Siddiqui, 332 ballots to give. That changes things slightly. Then you count out the surplus for McGovern. And then if there are any candidates with less than 50, so Louise Vendon had 49, and there were 22 write-ins. So, those all get transferred en masse. And then you start the runoffs. So the lowest person at this stage is the Queen Battle. So they distribute, somewhat randomly because she wasn't particularly affiliated. Then I was the guy who never seems to campaign. Me, Robert Winters, was the next person counted out. And again, you can start to see some patterns. I think more people would have voted for people like Kathy Zusi, Tim Flaherty and John Hanratty behind me, and that's kind of where they transferred principally. And then, but they went all over the place. And then Stan Rifkin, who again was sort of more aligned with the kind of hard left socialist-y kind of candidate. So his votes, again, remember, if you're already elected, you cannot receive votes. But 76 of them go to Sabrina Wheeler, and then much smaller numbers across the board. Zion Sharon, who was new candidate who was with the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, distributed primarily to other members of that group. John Hanratty with 95, Kathy Zusi with 85, Elizabeth Bisio 62, and then further down, right? Next person out was Ned Mallinson, who was a he had, I think he was the president of the ABC group. And pretty much a party guy, and a feeder. Let's face it, he wasn't a strong candidate. And of his 584 ballots that he had at that time, the chief recipients are Dana Bullister, who was also ABC with 216, and Burhan Azim with 119. I think Burhan expected to have done just a little bit better, but I think there was a lot of people competing for whatever base he happens to have. Then you count out Elizabeth Bizio, who again was a CCC candidate. Principally, they transferred place candidates like John Hanratty. In fact, like half of them go to John Hanratty, and then lesser numbers to Tim Flaherty, who was actually an independent candidate, and then Kathy Zusi. When you count out Peter Hsu, also CCC backed, but also on the bike slate. So you might see some of those votes appearing because on the bike. So they principally go to CCC. Sadly, Aisha Wilson, an incumbent, was sort of the odd person out here and was did not finish well in the number one votes and ended up being counted out a little bit earlier than expected in this one. Principally transferring votes to Denise Simmons. Again, not surprising. There are racial identifications that factor into all of the way these votes transfer. But then also some ABC candidates, as well as Kathy Zusi, who's a CCC, because Aisha was actually endorsed by both ABC and CCC. And then that left Dana Bullister. And at that point, there were already four candidates had been elected and most of the others defeated. So there aren't too many candidates eligible to receive ballots. But so you tend to just sort of fill the buckets at this point. But Patty Nolan, maybe gender, both women, probably then gets the lion's share, even though she was not affiliated with the ABC group. But Burhan Azim and Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler, who are, they hit quota early enough, and after they reached quota, any available ballots would go to other candidates. And then the last person counted out was John Hanratty. The margins were not particularly close, so there really wasn't any call for anything like a call for a recount or anything like that. So anyway, that's it. That was the, it's all she wrote for the city council race. The school committee race was the one that had the big controversy because of the sort of the reversal of fortune, or the apparent reversal of fortune based on the error. So I'll just again, I don't want to dwell on this endlessly here, but I will just take a little pop over to that again here and just say that the top vote getter, not surprisingly, was Elizabeth Hudson. And actually, before you do that, I would just emphasize something, which was that many voters in Cambridge don't really follow school committee. I mean, parents with children certainly do. People who are civically involved perhaps do. But there are a lot of people who are much more concerned about, housing issues, bike lane issues, whatever. I wish they were a little more interested in things like municipal finance, but that would be asking a lot, I suppose, especially in a city that doesn't really have a particularly functioning newspaper. So for people to sort of find out about the things that they maybe should find out about. But what really complicated the school committee race this year is it's a race where voters are not as well versed in what's going on, though some certainly parents were to some degree. So, in a strange twist, the Cambridge Educational Association, formerly known as the Cambridge Teachers Union, really decided to put a very big, heavy thumb on the scale this year. I don't know if they've done that in the past, but they certainly this one. They essentially wanted to choose the school committee, right? Which is kind of, I don't know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't even know how to think about it, quite honestly. It's sort of like maybe you want the parents to be making those decisions, and the school committee should be representative of the parents and the school children, as opposed to the employees of the school department who are perhaps more interested in their job security, job benefits, things like that. Anyway, so they did it. And so we all got multiple cards here. From the that was actually mailed by the Massachusetts Teachers Association in concert, presumably with the Cambridge Educational Association locally. They apparently were doing this in multiple cities and towns around the Cambridge, excuse me, around Massachusetts. But there were six candidates who were listed. And I think it's fair to say that the Cambridge Educational Association has taken a rather strong leftward turn in recent years. So many of the candidates, I would say, were pretty kind of hard to the left, quite honestly. But the voters don't necessarily know. They just know, oh, the teachers' unions say, oh, these are the good guys, right? So they actually did remarkably well, I think for maybe all the wrong reasons or maybe some of the right reasons. I personally was hoping Jane Hershey was going to get in of those six, but she was probably the one who was seen as a little bit more of an outlier and not sort of part of the hardcore in this group. In fact, there was somebody who was going around just promoting the five without Jane, which was a little kind of weird and mildly traitorous, I suppose. But the thing is, it wasn't just one. And by the way, these mailings are not cheap, right? So I got at least two of these when right here. There were other school committee candidates who were brand new who spent a lot of money, like Arjun Jayakumar in particular, just spent. I mean, I got multiple glossy, giant postcard mailings from this one school committee candidate. And I was like, okay, fine. That's right. By the way, the other big spenders, were as it's actually a shockingly high number, were the bike people. The Cambridge Bike Safety Group raised, what did they spend, 60 some odd thousand dollars, really like ridiculous numbers, in promoting. And then they even chose to say, well, here's our 12 preferred candidates, but they put little stars next to seven of them and saying, but these are the real ones, right? They actually put a later mailing that I didn't get that says, oh, and by the way, don't vote for these guys. I was included in the don't vote for these guys category. I shall wear that as a badge of honor, quite honestly. Not because I'm opposed to bike safety, but because I am absolutely opposed to fascistic ways about going about things. By the way, they also did the little mini cards that they shoved in every bike everywhere and every bike rack everywhere in the city. All the other organizations like ABC also did multiple mailings. Cambridge Residents Alliance really did very little this time around, but they did support the school committee group because they're all part of this whole Cambridge progressive electoral collaboration. And before I get back to the charts and graphs and things, I'll also mention here that the Cambridge Citizens Coalition, which has been trying to play a role in the ABC touts itself, a Better Cambridge, as we are the pro-housing group, but they're really just more pro-density. The CCC tends to be the more moderate. Let's moderate that to some degree, not anti-housing, in spite of what some of the ABC people may say. But the thing is that, they would put out literature basically illustrating the scale of what's being proposed under some things. Rather unsuccessful effort, by the way, was one group of subgroup of the CCC that called itself the Repeal Slate. None of them won, not because they didn't have, value and good things to say. It's just maybe it wasn't really the best. If you want to sell something, you it's better to sell a positive as opposed to a negative. And if you say undo everything, you're fundamentally running an uphill battle when you do that. But the CCC sent multiple mailings, some of which were political mailings, some of which are technically educational mailings. But let's face it, they're all political. Again, trying to sort of, get people alarmed at what's, what's being proposed in terms of scale. And they did their usual sort of multicolor who's he what's. By the way, I chose not to be affiliated with them this time. But then they also said, we don't want any part of you either. So I said, okay, fine. So I think, quite honestly, I think it's time to start creating new civic organizations. Hint, hint to everybody. Maybe the ABC's singular focus on build higher, thicker, taller, denser without any sense of balance or how things are paid for or whatever. Maybe that's not the right way. And maybe the CC's, don't build anything kind of appeal, whether that's an accurate appraisal or not. Maybe that's not the best selling point. And I think we need to do better. So anyway, if you got any good ideas about that, chime in.